Okay, so it's all yours.
Good morning. This talk is a slight variation on one that I gave to a industrial users group last year, primarily focused in the Michigan area on discrete event simulation. And as you might have guessed from my background, I sort of am an accidental modeler in terms of how I came about to start to embrace and enjoy simulations. And in fact, when I first really started to get into doing simulations, and I had my first copy of MATLAB, and I was writing my first simulations for the startup of a very large wastewater treatment plant in Freeport, I thought these things were the best. You know, this was the best thing in the world that anybody could be studying. And, you know, I was out evangelizing, and as time has progressed to Dow, simulation and modeling in general have become more and more important. But at some point, it started to be that everybody then wanted a model, or everybody wanted a simulation, and they sort of became the answer to all problems. And as my colleague Arthur Corden would state, it wasn't garbage in, garbage out. What people wanted was garbage in, gold out. So any problem, any situation could be solved by modeling, or if we just had enough modelers. So that's really where the title came from, about being careful what you wish for. So we wished for people to embrace modeling, but we may have, in some cases, bitten off more than we can chew. So I'm just going to briefly go through a little bit of background about Dow, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, cover some of the areas of simulation that we use at Dow, which should be quite familiar for all of you that are work in the process industries, and then focus on discrete event simulation, which is not usually taught to chemical engineering students, and is usually seen in the domain on either supply chain or logistics and industrial engineering. But it's we find it to be an extremely useful tool in general. And then if we have time, I'll touch a little bit about what I think new chemical engineers, the new engineers coming into the field, would be well served to know or have sort of as a perspective on being modelers or using modeler tools. This comes from my own experience, but also as we've been coaching new people coming into the area, that new and recent hires, so even though they might be very highly skilled, there's only a very small fraction that can really hit the ground running to be truly successful, you know, on their own in delivering values from simulations. So Dow is about 117 years old, and it's grown from sort of the scrappy, disruptive underdog, disrupting the supply of bromides and dyestuffs from Germany back at the turn of the century to a global multinational chemical company, and one of the few remaining large chemical companies. And as you see, we're spread across the globe, with particular concentrations in North America, Europe, and now in Asia Pacific. And Dow has been on the forefront of globalization since the 50s. And one of the very nice things about working for Dow is the ability to really take on very challenging problems or work on products that are of tangible importance beyond just the impact of plastic or other chemicals on our daily lives, but things like working on, can we improve the efficiency of reverse osmosis membranes? Can we make them cheaper? Can we improve the productivity of the production line? And so that provides a great deal of motivation to get up and, you know, take on these challenging type problems. And right now we're spread across quite a few different areas. You may have seen in the news some people suggesting that we carve up and change Dow, but that's for the past 20 years we've been constantly revising and redistributing our portfolio. So I think that's a pretty common experience for people in industry today. So we're in the same boat. So simulation, of course, ranges all the way from the molecular level out to the optimization or out to the enterprise level of the chemical industry or the process industries. And our organization, Engineering and Process Sciences, has people that are applying simulation and modeling tools at all these levels. And our group in particular is probably the broadest spreader in that we work from the molecular level all the way up to the enterprise level. So we're unique in our breadth. We might not have some of the specialization of, say, the fluid mechanics and mixing people or separations, but we do have experience in basically all the areas listed here. And so, you know, at the molecular level, I was struck by the fact that even at this sort of very esoteric and detailed thinking about molecules and how they're vibrating, etc., they've become they're using graphical based tools and modeling tools to do their coding. And I can remember that was a very strange thing for some people when they would see their discrete event simulations or even some of the early GUI-based modeling tools, because if they weren't used to writing out text files, it really couldn't be modeling. And then, of course, we step up and we do quite a bit of work in the multi-physics area. So can we combine physics-based models with chemistry-based models? And one of the tools that we use is COMSOL, which has really expanded our access to, you know, very nice finite element techniques and coding. And of course, the tried and true process flow sheets and chemical kinetics here have spent a great deal of time studying the polymerization of polyethylene or of ethylene in Aspen flow sheets. And so again, this is just not a surprise to people in this field. Then as we start to move at areas that are a little bit outside the traditional chemical engineering area, we look at discrete event simulations or simulations of plant productions in terms of how are workers moving, how are they interacting with machines. And this is actually a combination of screenshots where there's a 3D visualization tool that's linked into a system dynamics model, and then that's put out to a dashboard for ease of display for a manager. And now come to simulation at the enterprise level, and the idea of this was, can we support Dow's move towards this concept of enterprise reliability? And enterprise reliability is an idea that all activities, so everyone involved, either from taking an order to the final shipment of the order, can impact the reliability of the system, as well as Dow's ability to deliver on its commitments and maintain the trust of the customers. And it was it's the leadership viewpoint that Dow cannot continue to meet its growth targets if it doesn't, you know, step up its game and be able to really be the supplier of choice, be the innovator of choice, be the partner of choice for customers. And so they implemented this idea of enterprise reliability. Now, some of the interesting things that this did is it suddenly took individual businesses and groups of businesses that shared either feedstock streams or intermediates or had some natural alignment, and probably the best example of this would be the chlorine and propylene oxide chain. So starting from the most basic feedstock, brine, going through chlorine production and caustic production, through propylene oxide and down through the derivatives, you also share a whole other set of chlorine derivatives in addition to other propylene-based derivatives. So this creates an envelope, but it now pulled in businesses that hadn't, you know, had either just had relationships of you supplied the chlorine to me and I took the chlorine from you. But now they were being asked to think about how do investment decisions for, say, reliability or operating impact the overall bottom line of the company. Now, you would think that in a large multinational company that this would be a common, or this would have already been done. But apparently, this is actually not as common in large companies as you might imagine. There's an article in the Sloan Management Magazine about a few months ago that asked the question, do you need a data dictator? And in there, they talked about another large multinational consumer goods company where they were losing a ton of money. But when the CEO asked all the business presidents to come in and describe to them their profit and loss statement, everyone in the company was making money. So clearly, there was some disconnection in the data, as well as decisions about investments and operations. So as these envelopes started to evolve at Dow, what we found is that there was a gap in terms of the technology, or the in particular decision support models for the business teams to use to make these calls on where should we invest our limited capital to improve the reliability of the system, how should we allocate our limited raw material availability so that we get the most profit out over, say, the next quarter, etc. And as we've worked with the Supply Chain Tech Center with John Wasik, who many of you know, we've developed two tools to do that. One is value stream simulations, and the other is value stream optimizations. And optimization is a completely separate talk, but they shared a lot of commonalities in terms of trying to pull in these aspects of reliability, manufacturing and operations, business strategies, impact of supply chain, as well as economic data. So part I'm going to talk about is the discrete event simulation aspects and just sort of the general, some of the general features of that. And then I'm going to make some other observations that are beyond the enterprise aspect, but apply to discrete event simulation. So one of the more interesting aspects of this problem, at least went from trying to decide on how do you create a common decision support tool, is that all the main players that would, if you were to ask them for a model that would go into this system, would provide you with a completely different tool and different paradigm. And so the reliability and maintenance focused people, they have specific simulation, discrete event simulation tools that primarily ask, what will my system complete the mission without failures? Or if there's failures, how many failures are going to occur? How much is, what is my total repair time? So what's the overall availability of my system? And so this is very grounded in traditional Weibull analysis, so attempting to look at previous data on mechanical reliability of particular pumps or valves and combine them all into a simulation that describes the reliability of a plant or a process. And they can be quite proud of the fact that they can have thousands and thousands of components in their system, extreme detail, and very long mission times. And of course, they have a stochastic nature in them because of the failure and repair time distributions. And depending on the software tools used, they can also include very detailed modeling of how crews are allocated, repair crews are allocated, what training they need, whether or not you're using mirrored components, whether you have redundancies and things. So very, very sophisticated modeling set is available for that. And so, and again, it in and of itself has a whole, even within reliability and maintenance modeling like this, has a whole subculture or whole set of subcultures depending on whether or not you're talking about modeling electronics reliability, whether you're talking about primarily mechanical ones. And then Dow has influenced quite a bit the development of ones that are focused for process industry. The next level on the operations and manufacturing side, traditionally this has been influenced from work in industrial engineering and study. And so this is what a lot of people, if you were to pick up a book on discrete event simulation, this is what you would see. They're talking about, our focus is what is our throughput and where are the bottlenecks? How can I fix them? So the models are made up with discrete items, random number generation, cues and activities. Pretty much all the models themselves can expand about that, but you can do quite a bit with just those four modeling tools. And the features of them is that they have the stochastic nature. They're also time scheduled. So this is often for people that grew up or learned modeling in a say integrating, ODEs describing, CSTRs or kinetics reactions, a time propagating system from an initial values. The time schedule coding in the discrete event is very can be very strange because you're at 2 hours and all of a sudden you've jumped ahead to 10 hours with until, you know, when the next event was scheduled. So it took me a little while to grasp some of the intricacies of really of true discrete event simulation. And depending on the application, you can either be in a finite terminating type system or in a steady state system. And for us, most of our processes or most of the things that we want to study are finite terminating. This has some implications for how you think about the statistics and whether or not how you do counting around throughputs and capacities. The third area of modeling aspect is what's known as system dynamics. And for those of you that are familiar with the name of Jay Forrester will be quite familiar. He was an engineer at MIT who really was the first person to try to, you know, bring science and engineering to understanding business cycles. And and with the advent of some of the early computational tools that allowed for integrating ODEs, he came up with this idea of describing what was going on in a business through stocks and flows. And so for a chemical engineer to come in and look at a system dynamics model that looks just like a whole network of tanks with feedback loops. And so it's quite familiar. Now, typically these are run as deterministic models, and annoyingly set up as open loops. They have feedback loops sometimes, but to a chemical engineer, if you're looking at the problem, you could say, well, if I just put a PI controller here, then I would I wouldn't run into these oscillations and issues in my model. And I often got into trouble when I took a system dynamics course because I would try to put in PI loop or PI controllers. And I was told that was not proper system dynamics thinking. It has been my observation with these that the behavior can be a bit odd when they're trying to incorporate discrete events in there. And I think that's a function of the very basic type of integration that they use in their system, as well as if you start to get into modeling complex systems where you can have recycles and other factors, you can run into material balance issues. And I think that's mostly just the function of the architecture. If somebody was careful and developed a model in say MATLAB or another robust ODE solver, they could write that themselves and not worry about it. From the supply chain side, we see that you have typically a mix of system dynamics approaches and discrete event simulation approaches, depending on people's academic background. Different universities emphasize different things and have different traditions. And then on the economic side, this is typically driven by statistical forecasting and time series type models. So beyond even just these traditions of modeling techniques, even if you have people that are attempting to model the same approach with, say, a discrete event simulation type approach, software platforms have a strong influence, and a lot of that has to do with how the how things are represented, some of the jargon, how what metrics are typically measured, and so you when you if you go to a simulation conference and see people, you know, arguing vigorously about that you have to use half-width confidence limits to make determinations. Other people are saying, no, this is not useful. You need to be thinking about your metrics in this entirely different way. And it, you can identify usually what people, even before, even if they don't mention the software tool, you can often identify what tool they use just from how they approach the problem, because a lot of times the tool itself is much more amenable to approaching the problem from the left side versus approaching it from the right side. And when you start to get into stochastic simulation, there's a great deal of impassioned feelings about what's the right way to compare model configurations, and whether or not you really need to have, you should use the same random seed for every comparison case, or is it okay to just change other ones, let them change and let the statistics sort it out. So, and I will freely admit that I have been guilty of software or promoting software wars. So if we move on to the idea of what are some of the key questions and issues that we found when we've been applying this DES to just general problems, problem solving in chemical plants, as well as at the large scale enterprise level. And one of the most important ones for us, especially as we went to global, our models attempting to have represent our global chlorine production, for example, where you would have where we have four major production sites, one in Freeport, Texas, one in Louisiana, one in ERA 2, and then one in and then our European one in Stada. These are each of those are very large integrated sites. A large number of plants utilizing the chlorine. We have movement of material in between the sites, and it's a large modeling challenge, and this is actually one of the cases where algebraic based optimization tools like GAMS and AIMS are very, very efficient in this, because you can just write out the mapping and drive the sets and create the network from a base set of information. For discrete event simulation, you need to use a lot of you're actually formulating the model, connecting things up. And when you start to put in aspects of recycle flows and diverge blocks and merging blocks, where you have rules about the prioritization of flows, you're either sharing tanks, etc., it becomes quite cumbersome with traditional discrete event simulation tools. Fortunately, a few companies have developed this discrete rate technology. The one that I'm most familiar with is from Extensim, and this is a very clever modeling approach for doing these high rate discrete event simulations, because what it creates is many, many small network flow linear programs that can be solved nearly instantaneously when there's changes, and you can keep updating through the models, and it's just a wonderful way to approach this. And it allows you to seamlessly layer on scheduling and control logic, all the maintenance, all the reliability type failures, all the details that you want to explore, but still be able to have this, the aspect of continuous flow, filling and filling inventory tanks, etc. And so this is our main workhorse for that. As I said, DAO has also influenced maintenance reliability tools, and so our maintenance group's tool of choice, Titan, from Fidelis, is another tool that uses this linear programming type approach to set up the network. But their system is not quite as oriented towards the discrete event stuff. So they've sort of said, we're all about linking continuous flow units together and looking at their reliability. So I recommend these tools over some of the other discrete event tools for the process industry. So some of the things that we've learned over the past 10 years that we've been working with these discrete event tools is that there are really effective and efficient ways to set up models that save you a lot of time especially when the customers come back and say, oh, we want to look at this new set of scenarios, or we've changed our minds about that. Unfortunately, it took us about 7 years to figure out how to get there, and so there was a lot of this is based on just repeated iterations of improvements and trying to say, okay, there's got to be a better way to do this. And these two modeling aspects are what we call generic structures, as well as and operating and scenario-based structures. And the key part to driving this aspect of discrete event simulation is that you start at asking the question of, what does my data look like that I have available to model my system, as well as what is the output that I'm trying to achieve with my simulation. And because of that, you're using the data to drive the model rather than taking a model and piecing it together and hoping that you have the right data that goes into it. And so this is greatly facilitated by modeling tools that are integrated with a database system. And so the first one, in terms of the generic simulation framework, is when you're the goal here is, can I have a single model that allows me to represent multiple systems versus multiple scenarios of a single system? And this is really refined by my colleague Naoko Akiya. And she was faced with this problem of, we were designing a new manufacturing facility for Dow. This was when we were looking at our battery production, and there were they had at least 20 different configurations and questions about throughput sizes or throughput capacity, buffer placements, etc. And while discrete event simulation is very effective in answering all these questions, it's not effective if you have to constantly be revising and redoing the structure of the simulation. And so what she hit upon was this idea of forming the system as a set of input data that was processed by a logic system, and then that provided the target output system. And she actually modeled this based on the ideas of resource task network optimization formulation. And so this has some really great advantages in terms of flexibility, because you're essentially writing a new recipe for the new structure or how you want your process configured. The downside to this system is that there's quite a lot of overhead and thinking that is required to get you there. So you spend a great deal of the initial development time just formulating how the system should work. But once you have it, you can crank through many, many configurations. But it can be a hard sell sometimes to the customers, because the model that you, or if you show them the model structure, the flow sheet doesn't look anything like their plant. And that's one of the features that people typically want from a discrete event simulation, is like the animation that shows, the materials being, made in the first activity or the first workstation, and then the worker moving into the second station, or that this batch unit is in operation, then it's offloaded to a rail car, etc. With this type of generic plant model, you don't get that. On the side of scenario and operating structures for fixed assets, this is a more traditional approach, in that you end up with just one or two fixed configurations that are manipulated through a database system. So this is much more operational focused, and much more focused on asking specific types of questions, like if we take down this set of units for a turnaround and we have this market demand pattern, how much are we going to lose? How much inventory do we need to set? So, and again, for one of our key operating questions for enterprise reliability is, given a fixed maintenance budget, where is the most important place for us to improve reliability so that it propagates through the overall change? And again, both of the key features of this is that they're database design. So one thing with discrete event simulation is that you can just start asking all kinds of questions. You look at all kinds of scenarios. And so it's sometimes a challenge to get your decision-making team to be focused on let us get to this specific answer. How do I satisfy my performance target, as fast as possible? And so the main ways that we approach this are with supporting analytical models, combining it discrete event simulation with optimization, as well as designed experiments or meta modeling. And the simulation plus analytical model is one that's, I think, perhaps one of the harder ones to implement, because it requires that you have people that are really very versed, or I should say very facile, with coming up with these analytical representations of models and doing some advanced mathematical analysis. And we had a gentleman who now works for Samsung, who was very good at this. He was particularly skilled at variational calculus, and he could do a lot of really interesting things just looking at a network, taking some of the rules, proved to be quite an interesting way to approach the simulation problems, because it eliminated a great deal of the search base and focused you and say, here's the area to simulate and get your output data from. So this is really that's really the key ask, the key question is, can you suit your search space? Simulation optimization, this is combining simulations with typically black box techniques. We have work going on now with Nick Sahi, Nidis, and Satya, applying this to turnarounds at Dow. So we have discrete simulations representing our production, and we're trying to find out what's the best configuration or the best timing for turnarounds and how should they be staged. Simulation combined with DOE, design of experiments, can work quite well. Again, it requires some understanding of what's the right way to apply the design of experiments to it. And so you want to, you don't want to get stuck in this idea of fractionally or full factorial design. The best ones are being able to interface it with, say, the optimal or some customized DOEs, and that can really really reduce the effort in terms of developing your simulation or your search space. So this is a quick summary I like to try to get people focused on when they're starting out or when I'm training them on discrete event simulations. It's the questions of ABC. What are you trying to, what can you adjust? What does the client mean by best? What constraints do you need to understand? And what's the correct distribution to model? And just as I was thinking about some of the, a few things that still bother me when we do these discrete event simulations. A lot of times I've observed in chemical plants that, there's structured data, and some of that is either just because of inherent autocorrelation, because of the system that we have, as well as imposed control or decision making on the plant. So you have a planner that or a scheduler that's making decisions about run rates, and that's convoluted with the reliability and just the other factors within the network. And in general, not just in the chemical industry, but in most discrete event simulations, this is completely ignored. Your colleague, the CMU colleague, or for the folks at CMU, Baha Biller, in the Tepper School, did a lot of her focus on her PhD on autocorrelation in discrete event simulation, and that's been carried on into the financial world. So the financial world is far ahead of where discrete event simulation people are in terms of dealing with autocorrelation. But I think it's something that we need a better appreciation does it impact our system. And then as we go to very large models or whether just the overall scope of the system being modeled or the very high level of detail within it, I've noted that people tend to still use a single convergence. So they'll look at what is the availability of a particular unit, a target unit, and that's what they're calling as the convergence criteria. But then will still report multiple metrics, and it seems to me that they're possibly ignoring some of the impacts of that are known in when you're doing multiple comparisons and statistics that come from Bonferroni's inequalities. And so I think that at least if we're for people training chemical engineers, that if they're teaching this type of simulation and thinking that they should be really, training people on what's the correct way to make these inferences from the results. You know, clearly sometimes the answers are very far apart, and it's not statistics aren't required, but I've also seen where stuff is close and people are saying, oh yeah, this is definitely the right choice, and to me there's not the confidence of intervals were too close or perhaps wrote that incorrectly. And then another one that's always interesting to me is that if you have if you're modeling failures of thousands of components at an hourly granulation over 20 years, is this really necessary for making decisions? So you start to see people reporting, you know, that they're essentially telling you that they can discriminate, you know, 83, you know, a downtime of 83 hours out of 20 years, and I'm a bit skeptical, but I don't ever. This is not typically routinely discussed or studied in with you know the supporting statistics or implications in the literature. So, just a quick little opinions about what engineers should know when it comes to delivering values from a simulation, not just the discrete event simulation. The things that we tend to miss are the definition phase and the execution phase of the project. And a lot of people tend to jump way at the end of the execution phase, and you know they want to get in modeling, they want to start developing the tools, etc. And I think that this comes from that everybody is focused on getting a tool or getting a model or getting something, you know, running on the computer. And for me, that's not really the key aspect. The key aspect is what simulation allows us to do in industry is that it allows us to define a decision that's important, has value, and then we can go about generating the data to make that decision. So this is a very active, you know, process. First we're going to decide and define the decision, and then we're going to identify the data we need to make that decision, and then we're going to go get it. And again, why my proposal on why this is a good definition for people that use simulations and modeling is that it really focuses us on what's valuable to people. So the simulation, no matter how cool and sophisticated it is, really is only cool and sophisticated for the modeler or for the person, you know, developing and utilizing it. Decision makers only care about the data that comes out of the simulation. They don't care if you did the model in 1 hour or 1,000 hours within, you know, project timeline constraint, or how nifty it is, how fast, you know, runs on the CPU, or if you did parallelization on a GPU unit, etc. They care about the data. And so this puts you in the position where you're understanding the data, you're focused on that, and it's very upfront and clear. It also tends to eliminate any kind of toy projects or ones where somebody said, yeah, we should have a model, but they don't really care. So, and then just as the final part, you know, clarity on the data required to make the decision is so important for a successful simulation project. So I put together the simulation quality objectives, which I modeled on the EPA DQO process. And the DQO process is a very, the data quality objectives is a very fascinating paper to read from just thinking about how you solve problems or do any kind of experimental type work and problem solving work. So I recommend it just as a general technical reference. But when we break it down to apply to simulation, you want to be able to have the customer state the problem, identify the decision, identify the inputs to the decision, i.e. the data, scope and boundaries of the study, develop a decision rule, understand the uncertainty, and then optimize the simulation design. So fairly similar protocol to that I've seen published in other areas, but one thing that I have learned is that I always make my first estimate of how long this definition phase is going to take, and I make it 10 times that long, or 10 times the effort to complete. So, again, just another restatement. You must understand the decision that the decision makers make. And that's really, and from industrial simulation standpoint, that's really all that counts, the data that's required. Your simulation is just sort of in the background. And just to put a visual on what happens to your project when you skip on the definition phase. So regarding execution, I think that for those of you that work in industry, you would see that these are pretty standard. There's always this question of are you aligned? Are we being accurate enough? And are we going to be fast enough? And this is where all that front definition and scoping of the project can help greatly.
Scott, we're running a little bit.
Some of the considerations that go into the actual practical aspect of completing the model.
Yeah. Scott, we're going to be running out of time just to see if you can wrap up in the next few minutes.
Yep, just going to.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Just a couple of slides. So project management skills for new students or new people, or even people out there practicing, if you want to upgrade your ability to deliver value on simulation projects, really improve your project management skills. That's a key aspect of that. And again, as I've been harping on this, industrial and problem solving is all about identifying the decision and identifying the data. And just a comment that, yes, sometimes you do actually have to simulate cows, because one of my very earliest projects, we had cows as a failure mode. So. Thank you.
Let's see, I think we do have a few minutes for questions. Anybody out there who would like to ask a question to Scott? I guess not as usual. So let me ask one question, Scott. So you gave sort of a nice overview in terms of the requirements and what it takes to implement these type of tools. But one thing I'm curious if you could comment is we do have a number of tools, as you mentioned, the Aspen, the GPROMs, MATLABs, and so forth. But yet it would seem, at least that from an outsider, somebody who's not very well versed into discrete event simulation, that there's still kind of a big gap in terms of truly, at least from a conceptual point of view, solving, let's say, discrete continuous dynamic systems under uncertainty. Is that basically, so I'd just like to hear your comments, which I think are especially of interest to, let's say, more the academics. What would it take, what do you foresee would be the new generation of tools to try to close this gap?
Well, I think that the simulation optimization has sort of been the mythical creature out there to try to achieve this. And you know, the incumbent tool that's out there is OpQuest. So Fred Glover's tool, you know, very, you know, well-established combination of sort of optimization and the heuristics and things like that. But what's interesting is that I never, in the last 10 years, I've never heard anyone outside of the OpQuest people ever present, you know, papers or discussions about solving a really hard problem. So anything outside a toy problem with a tool like OpQuest or the simulation optimization type thing. So it you know, it's just not that common on there. So the ones that I've seen, you know, sort of the meta modeling and things where people are you know, they have a well defined type process or model, and they're able to find, you know, find the better solution or optimal solution. But really, people are still stuck in kind of manual type experimentation and testing. And you know, at Dow, we were, you know, there was a great deal of work done on that. You know, we